This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn. This afternoon, we talk about cats. Feline behaviorist Pam Johnson-Bennett is our guest. She's with us to answer your questions about cats and cat behavior. What makes them tick? Or should I say, what makes them purr? Pam Johnson-Bennett is the author of 5 books on cat behavior, including Think Like a Cat and Twisted Whiskers. Her newest is Hiss and Tell, True Stories from the Files of a Cat Shrink. Johnson-Bennett is considered one of the country's leading experts on cat behavior. One of her books has been inducted into the Cat Fancy Magazine Hall of Fame. She also writes a monthly behavior column for Cats Magazine. She lives in Nashville, Tennessee, where she runs a vet-referred counseling practice. Listeners, if you've got questions about kittens or cats, give us a call this afternoon. Pam Johnson-Bennett can help. In Champaign-Urbana, the number 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. Pam, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hey, well, thank you very much for having me back.
Oh, well, it's been my pleasure. It's been so long since we've talked. You and your cat or cats, are they doing well?
Yes, we're all doing well. I just came back from a book tour, so I'm getting an especially large amount of affection and love lately from
my
cats.
I bet. The biographical information at the outset of the books, Hiss and Tell and Think Like a Cat, says you began your career when you found yourself with a problem cat that the vet labeled hopeless. What
right.
was the problem, and how did you work through it?
One of my cats became very aggressive, and when I came home from the vet, because the vet had said, put this cat down, there are so many other cats in the world, and I went home so upset, thinking, oh my gosh, and I looked at this little cat, and I thought, I've had you since you were 6 weeks old. If there's something wrong, I probably did it. And in the process of educating myself, I realized I did everything wrong. I started out the way a lot of people start out with cats. We don't get prepared. It's an impulsive decision. You rescue a cat on the side of the road, or your neighbor has, you know, kittens, you know, that she found, and you take the cat in, and you don't prepare. And that's what I did. I used all the wrong methods on this cat. I used dog training methods. I used reasoning in terms of trying to think of this cat as a furry little child. And I made all the mistakes. So I just set out to understand how this animal communicates, learn everything I could about cats. And what I learned that was most important was that I was blaming the cat and thinking the cat was misbehaving and being aggressive out of spite because she was mad at me. And when I changed and I realized what the cat's true motivation was, which was total confusion and fear on her part, I was able to solve the problem.
Yeah. How long did it take to turn things around?
It took about 6 months because I was really literally feeling my way through the dark. Because years ago, we're talking about like 25 years ago, there was not a lot of information out there on behavior. Nowadays, almost all the major cities have behaviorists. Back then, you never heard of that. Mm-hmm. You heard of dog trainers, but no one ever talked about taking their cat to a trainer. So there was not a lot of information, so a lot of it for me was trial and error, and that's why it took so long.
Yeah. Well, I would think that if you're dealing with some problems that have been going on for a while, you got to be patient.
Right, you do have to be patient, and you have to accept baby steps as being good. You know, if you're going in the right direction, even if it's a baby step or even if it's 2 steps forward and 1 step back, it's a victory. And sometimes we get very impatient with that. Humans are impatient anyway, you know, and when you're dealing with another being like a cat where you're speaking one language and he's speaking the other, you really have to give and take, and a lot of times we're used to the taking part. You know, we think that if we bring this cat in, for instance, you've rescued a cat on the side of the road or you've taken in a cat from the shelter, we automatically think that the cat's going to understand that he is now in this loving, wonderful, safe home. And then we get upset when behavior problems start out because the cat is dealing with all this baggage that we don't know about from his beginnings.
Mm-hmm.
So it does take patience. That's probably the biggest thing, you know, in the biggest tool in your toolbox when it comes to solving behavior problems.
Yeah. Let's talk with a listener. The first listener we're going to talk to this afternoon waits for us on line two in Rantoul. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I had a question about introducing a cat to a baby. We have a seven-month-old, and she's extremely curious about the cat. And we have kind of an old and somewhat crotchety cat. And we've been slowly introducing them. The cat is no longer nervous around her, but she doesn't want to be touched too much. And we obviously don't want the baby to grab her and get scratched. So what we do is, right now, just when we're holding the cat, allow the baby to touch her. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering about how to proceed with that further.
Okay, what you can do is have two people in the room. For instance, maybe you're holding your baby, and mm-hmm. your husband is playing with the cat with a fishing pole-type toy or feeding the cat a treat or even her meal, and it helps the cat form an association that the baby is totally cool. Everything's comfortable. You know, if every time the cat and the baby are in the room, you're trying to get the baby to interact with the cat's going to get nervous. So you first want to set up a situation where the cat sees the baby out of the corner of her eye and thinks, okay, she's here, not a big deal. And then she'll start to relax, and then you can start with, you know, open-handed petting and let the cat actually go up to the baby and do some sniffing, maybe while the baby's sleeping.
Okay.
Because you really have to let the cat set the pace. And that the first step is very important, and we very often forget that, is first let the cat just get totally comfortable with the fact that the baby's not always going to be after her.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other telephone calls are welcome. Questions, comments? Join us. 333-9455 is the number in Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Pam, what's the most common behavior problem you're called on to help with?
Oh, it's the dreaded litter box. It's something that we don't understand how complex the relationship is between the cat and the litter box. We think it's just a box in the corner filled with litter that the cat just goes to whenever he has to eliminate. We don't understand how so many things can come into play there that can cause problems, whether it's that the box is too dirty or you don't have enough boxes for the number of cats or it's in an area that's wrong. A common problem I see that will totally flabbergast owners that they've never realized this is in a multi-cat household. Sometimes you've put the litter box, or maybe you have three litter boxes, but you've put them all in the same room, and maybe that's a room that one of the cats has kind of claimed as his, so the other cats are afraid to go in there. So location, mm-hmm. just as with real estate, is crucial.
Location, location, location.
Clients will call me up and say, well, I have five cats, but I have eight litter boxes. And then my next question will be, well, where are they? Well, they're all in the guest room. Well, if one or two cats, you know, have become very dominant, then you've got a bunch of cats who are afraid to go in there.
Mm. Well, let's talk about some other litter issues. What type of box do you like? What type of litter do you like, recommend?
Oh, boy, I'm probably going to make a lot of people mad here, but I think an open litter box is the best. One of my books is called Think Like a Cat, and it's not titled that by accident. It was very deliberate on my part because I want owners to look at why they choose things and make sure they're choosing it in a way that will help the cat. For instance, we like covered litter boxes in our houses because we don't want to look at the mess. We don't want to smell it. We don't want the litter scatter. So for us, a covered box is ideal. From a cat's point of view, a covered box can be a disaster. Because it holds more moisture, the air doesn't circulate, the litter takes longer to dry, so it's pretty smelly in there. Also, when the box is covered, it's more inconvenient for us to go in and scoop it, so we tend to not do it as often. And also, being covered in a multi-cat household, the cover creates only one entrance and one exit. So if you're a cat and you're in the box and another cat comes over and startles you, you can feel trapped.
Hmm.
So if you use that example throughout your house in terms of all the behavior problems you might be experiencing with your cats, just shift your focus from how you're seeing it to how your cat might be seeing it, and you can solve a lot of behavior problems.
Hmm. How often should one scoop the box?
If you're using scoopable litter, you should scoop twice a day. And if you get into the habit of that in the morning and then when you come home from work or before you go to bed, it's no big deal, and your cat will be so happy. And another important reason for doing it, other than just the cleanliness of the box, is it gives you an opportunity to monitor your cat's health. For instance, if you scoop in the morning and you see that, you know, maybe the cat hasn't eliminated since yesterday morning, or maybe the stool is especially hard, or maybe there's diarrhea, you're on that right away, as opposed to maybe scooping the box, you know, three times a week or twice a week. You don't know how long that problem's been going on.
Hmm.
So it's an important monitoring tool.
And you're okay with a scoopable litter?
I'm okay with it. I know that there has been almost like this rumor that goes around that scoopable litter forms blockages and the cats can't breathe. There has been no documented case of a cat that's had problems. If you have young kittens and they're doing a lot of playing in the litter, you know, then, yes, maybe you should be concerned about that. But none of the vets that I have spoken to, and I've done a lot of research on this, there have been no documented cases.
Yeah.
And actually, the cats, for the most part, prefer that very soft substrate of that sand-like litter as opposed to some of the alternatives that are out there.
Yeah. With my cat, I have not used the perfumed litters because I'm concerned about that. You know, I know that my cat is very—he's really always working with his nose and that kind of thing. And I wonder if that would be problematic. A litter that's been perfumed.
You're very smart to be aware of that. Again, you're thinking like a cat instead of a human. A cat's nose when he goes in the litter box is so close, you know, a quarter of an inch away from the litter as he's going in there and finding the spot. Imagine if you have this scented litter, what an assault that is on his nose. And basically, the perfumed litters are there for us. That's to cover up the scent for humans. For a cat, it does nothing. Because when a cat goes in the litter box, what he wants to smell is nothing. He wants it neutral. And then he'll put his scent on it when he eliminates, and then he covers it up, and that scent disappears. That's the ideal setup for a cat.
Mm. And how much litter is ideal?
About, as a general rule of thumb, about a 2-inch layer. Basically what you want is the cat to be able to go into the box, eliminate, cover, and still be able to come back one or two more times and still have enough litter so that there's clean litter for him to eliminate and also cover. If you're not using enough, then when he covers, he's moved all of it over to one side of the box, and then when he goes again, he's stuck either going right on the plastic bottom of the box or going on used litter.
Yeah.
And don't use too much litter, because then it's an absolute waste, and then you get a lot of kick out, you know, a lot of litter scatter. The other thing is the size of the box. It should be, ideally, the length should be almost twice the length of your cat from maybe the top of the head to the top of the rump. You want to make sure it's big enough and comfortable enough for him. And there are a lot of litter boxes out there, you know, like the electronic ones,
mm-hmm.
and there's one that has a raised edge along the side that's supposed to kind of control litter scatter. When you're looking at the size of the box, keep in mind the actual floor size for the cat. You know, that electronic litter box looks very big, but the actual surface that the cat has to eliminate on is really pretty small. So if you have an 18-pound Maine Coon cat, make sure you have a box that's big enough for him.
Yeah.
Or he'll find a spot, you know, on his own, and it won't be one that you like.
Yeah. And I know I've heard that, I think veterinarians say that the most common behavior problems that cause people to get rid of their pets is, you know, problems with urination.
Right.
For both cats and dogs.
Right. Right. And there's a 3-step approach to dealing with this. The first is because a cat is a creature of habit, the minute, I mean, literally the second you see your cat has not used the box, that he's gone somewhere else, that should be a red flag to take him to the vet, because there's a good chance it could be a medical problem, and you want to rule that out before you start assuming it's behavioral. And what happens is whenever they're having a medical problem, they associate the box with their pain, so they think if they go somewhere else, it won't hurt. So the three rules are, you first go to the vet, rule out medical. Second, you look at the litter box itself and make sure you've met all the cat's needs. Did you change brand of litter? Is the box too small? You know, has something happened about the box that or the litter itself that's not good? Then if you've ruled that out and everything seems okay with the box, then take a look at the environmental issues. Have you added a cat? Have the dynamics in your multi-cat household changed? Or have you added anything? I mean, did you get married? There's a new spouse, and maybe your cat is reacting to that. Cats hate change. So that's the order you should take it in.
Hmm. Let's talk with some other listeners. Next, we go to Aurora, caller on line 4. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I appreciate you talking about the litter box. I also heard that you should change the litter and clean the litter at least in 48 hours because that's when the germs start to multiply. I thought that was a good point to make.
Well, that has more to do with toxoplasmosis. There's always a warning out there for pregnant women that they shouldn't handle the litter box duties because of the chance of toxo. And actually, it's not infective in the first 48 hours. Like, if you get it out of there before 48 hours, then it's not infective. So that might be what you heard.
Well, I just think it's a good point from the considering the cat also.
Sure.
It's only fair to the animal.
I mean, think of it from our point of view. I mean, going into a dirty litter box is like you going to a public restroom where maybe, it hasn't been kept
absolutely.
Clean. You know, you wouldn't want to use it, and you have the option of then going, to another facility, whereas the cat is stuck using that, terrible litter box.
I wonder, what is this new product that's crystals and it's very expensive? It's in a blue bag, and it's $9, and it's crystals.
Yeah, there are a lot
of... How do they work? I can't see.
There are a lot of brands coming out like that, litter pearls and litter crystals, and what they're supposed to do is be super absorbent, and you're not supposed to have to change it as much. My clients have given me mixed reviews on it. Some people just absolutely love it. Others say that it has a very musty smell when it gets wet. So if you're having problems, if your cat doesn't like the soft, scoopable litter, then yes, maybe you should experiment with other kinds. But if you are going to change litter, especially for something that's really of a different texture, what you should do is put out another box so that the cat still has the option of the box he wants. Or the other way to do it is to slowly add, literally sometimes it's just, a teaspoon or a tablespoon at a time of the new litter, and you over the course of maybe 3 to 5 days, you're gradually adding the new litter and less of the old litter, because once again, cats hate change.
I wasn't thinking of it for myself. My daughter has multiple cats, and I just wondered if it'd be easier for her, and that's why I asked that question.
I really think the scoopable litter. I think it's the best because you're scooping out the solids.
And I don't have any problems with it, but she has multiple cats, and that's a problem. The other thing I wanted to ask you, a friend of mine has a cat, a long-haired cat, with, I suppose you'd call fur knots, or what do you call them on a cat?
A mat.
Is there any easy way to deal with that?
Long-haired cats have to be brushed every day. They have to be, otherwise they form mats.
Yeah.
That night. So the best thing is take the cat to the groomer, get all the mats out, so you're starting with a clean slate, and then daily brushing. And if the cat already has mats and you're trying to get them out and you can't use a groomer, you can sprinkle a little cornstarch on the mat and then slowly work your way from the bottom, from the ends of the hair up, and you can slowly...
took it to a groomer, the groomer would just do it naturally. They wouldn't do anything to the cat, like put it to sleep or anything.
They can't. Only if you take the cat to the vet. Can the cat be sedated for grooming? But if the cat is really matted, you may want to take them to the vet because there's a lot of pulling and yanking going on. It depends how severe it is.
Okay.
Sometimes the easiest thing to do when the mats are really bad and they're just really tight knots is to shave just that, just cut the mat out or shave it. But I would leave that to a groomer or a vet to do because the cat's skin is so paper thin, it's so easy to cut.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next we go to a listener who's waiting for us on line one in Urbana. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have two cats, a male and a female. The male was, about a year old when I got the 10-week-old kitten. And he's been wonderful with her, grooming her, very affectionate. And now, a couple of years later, they still play together an awful lot, but he gets too rough with her. She cries and hisses at him, and he persists. And I've tried various ways of intervening and not successfully. So any suggestions?
Yeah, he's probably a little more dominant and also, just like with people, he's a little more energized than she is.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would do is take him aside a couple times a day and get a fishing pole type toy and play with him, just you and him, one-on-one, and let him work it all out, let him take his aggression out on the toy. And the fishing pole toys I love because you can control the action and you can move the toy like
right.
prey. And if you do that, that'll help his energy so it's not getting so built up so that he takes it out on her. Cats are opportunistic hunters, and they spend
yeah.
their day kind of waiting around for prey. And if nothing's happening, especially with indoor cats, if there's no stimulation, eventually it gets to the point that anything that moves will become a target, and
right.
it could just be your sweet little cat that's going by. So,
well, I thought, I was rather nervous when I brought this little kitten home because he was so active. He was running across the ceiling, and believe me. And I was so impressed with his tenderness with her, and I don't understand why it changed.
It's probably just he's enthusiastic in his play, and
yes, he is.
He's probably more dominant, and also since she's probably backing down, and that lets him know, okay, I'm winning.
Uh-huh.
You know? So if she stood up to him more, maybe he wouldn't do it, but you can't really sit her down and say, okay, you've got to, you know, stand up for yourself. So if you can get rid of some of his energy one-on-one,
uh-huh.
then he'll be a lot calmer when he's around her. And you really need to do it on a maintenance level, like twice a day, 10 or 15 minutes,
okay.
his most active times. You could be talking on the phone or watching TV or have another family member just engage him in playtime, and
yeah.
you'll see a wonderful result.
It usually happens. And he knows this after I go to bed at night, you know, and I hear them chasing.
Okay,
and then
play. All right, here's a trick. And even if you don't have two cats, even if you just have one cat, for anyone listening out there who keeps
uh-huh.
you up at night, do a playtime with the interactive toy right before you go to bed.
Okay.
That will, because he's a nocturnal animal, that will help kind of shift his inner clock. You do the playtime. Do a winding down of the action at the end. Let the prey die. Let the cat feel very satisfied so that at the end of the game he's not revved up.
Okay.
And then you can either give him a treat or a little bit of food. Then he's going to be more inclined to sleep.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Good luck.
Let's go and talk with another listener on line two in Champaign. Hi. Hello?
I'm on line two in Champaign.
Yes.
Am I on? Okay.
You're on here.
I have Think Like a Cat, and it's a wonderful book.
Thank you very much.
And I know what my cat is thinking. She's thinking, I've got her, that is me, trained.
It's kind of the way it is. Isn't it?
Well, there's a specific question. I have an antique chest, which belonged to my great-great-grandmother, and, you know, I set a lot of store by. And she never made any move to get on it. Although, and it has not been moved, nor has any furniture around it been moved, until about a month or 6 weeks ago. She started jumping up on it, and I discouraged her by, you know, getting out the bird and playing with her and so forth. And now we go every evening through this thing of she gets up on the antique chest, and then she gets her plate. Now, I've tried outfoxing her by giving her the play before she thinks about getting up on the chest.
Did you set up any deterrence
respond.
On the chest?
Pardon?
Did you set up any deterrence on the chest?
Well, yeah, I've been trying to get sticky paws, but it's hard to get here.
You can just use, if you can't get sticky paws, for anyone out there, is a double-faced tape that you can get in a pet supply store that's meant for putting on upholstery to keep cats from scratching. But
right,
what you
and
can
it,
do,
it works with her. I've used it on upholstery, but I'm out of it and I've had trouble getting it. I have ordered some.
Okay, you can
and
just use plain double-faced tape, put it on a couple placemats, a couple vinyl placemats, and just leave the placemats on that chest. You're going to have to leave it there. It's going to look ugly for a little while. But as she jumps up and realizes, ooh, you know, I'm sticking to this, I don't like it so much, she will form an association that the chest is not a fun place to be.
But why doesn't she respond to the toy when I try to outthink her?
Because she's not, you're not making the connection that the chest is a bad thing. All you're doing is she's up on the chest and, oh, there's playtime. And you might even be reinforcing it if you are a little late in getting to the toy. If you're not distracting her before she gets on the chest, then she's connecting that jumping on the chest means we're going to have playtime.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do a twofold approach. You have to set up the deterrent and also distract her. But
the
sticky paws or the double face tape you can get in a hardware store and just put it on some cheap plastic placemat.
Oh, yeah.
Leave it there for a week, and she will no longer want to be on there.
Okay, I want to thank the caller for her call this afternoon, and we're going to go next to a listener in Urbana on line 3. Hi.
Hi. We obtained a cat through the Humane Society, and we've had this cat for about 2.5 years, and it is it has Maine Coon in it. How much, I don't know, but at about 2.5 years of age, it weighs about 13 pounds, and it's not fat by any means. It's just a really large frame, beautiful tiger cat. Anyway, for Christmas, my little girl got a purebred Himalayan for a gift, and it's about 6 months old now, and I was worried that the two wouldn't play together nicely and what have you, and they at least tolerate each other, and they play together some. But the problem with the Himalayan is that it defecates kind of all over the place. I mean, it goes on the couch, and it goes in this corner that it likes very much, and it goes elsewhere. Now, I have one great big litter box that has a cover on it, and I heard your remarks about you don't, you know, care for the covers too much. That's the right. First I've heard that. But I had two boxes, and they both would go in each other's box. It didn't seem to really serve any purpose. But and then outside of the big box, I have to put papers down because she just goes all over the place.
Okay. Have you had her to the vet to make sure?
Yes, she's had two fecals, and in fact, she's at the vet now. But the fecals have shown nothing. She's been spayed. You know, she's had quite a few.
Okay. What I would recommend, what may have happened, is she may be uncomfortable, especially Himalayans with the long, very silky hair. She may be uncomfortable in the covered box. And you may want to have two boxes on opposite sides of the house, not covered. Even though they'll be using each other's box, you can't designate one box for her. It may be the kind of thing where if she's feeling the least bit intimidated by the other cat, and that cat is kind of in front of the door where the litter box is, she has the option of going on the other side of the house to the other box. It just sets up a little more safety for her. So I would do two boxes in different areas and take those covers off.
Okay. And anything else? I mean, should I put anything in the corners where she likes to go all the time?
You can. There's a product you can get called Feel Away. You can get it from your vet, and it's a spray. And it's not a deterrent, but what it does is it's synthetic facial pheromones. And cats, where they facially rub, don't urine mark or mark with anything else. So if you spray in those areas where she's going and you also do some playtime with her, it will help her feel that, wow, I facially marked here, I'm playing here, I feel good, positive, and confident. It might change her association.
Play with her in that area then? Or?
Play in the area where she is going, right. And also when you set up your litter boxes, make sure they're in open areas. Don't have them in closets or under vanities. Escape potential is very important for a cat. You know, we think with a bathroom, we want privacy, you know. But for a cat, safety is most important. So if the box is wedged in a corner, if you get down and you look from the cat's point of view from being in the box, if you feel very confined, if you can't see a good visual field out the door or down the hall, your cat is probably not comfortable there.
Are bathrooms okay?
Bathroom is okay as long as it's not wedged in a corner. As long as there's a little bit of reaction time so that if she's in the litter box and the other cat comes in, she has some time to maybe jump up on the tub or the sink or get out, that she won't feel totally trapped. The worst thing, other than a covered box, is a box that's in a closet, because that's essentially the same as a covered box. The cat is trapped. So just make sure there's a little more escape route. It may just mean moving the box out from the wall a little bit.
Okay. Do you know anything else about, it seems like it was, ever since we've had her for about 3 or so months, she's had never had a formed hard bowel movement. It's always been very...
Okay, then there probably is a medical reason for this, and it may be beyond just having a fecal float done. There may be something else going on. There might be inflammatory bowel disease or irritable colon or something else. So you may want to do a few more diagnostics, because the problem might be that she's uncomfortable, and when she has for instance, if it's inflammatory bowel disease, they actually have a bowel spasm, and it hurts so much that the stool comes out and they really can't help it. So I would talk to your vet about a few more diagnostic tests.
Okay, and diet, do you recommend any dietary measures?
Your vet will, based on what's going on, the vet may have to put the cat on a special diet, because that's not normal to not have a formed stool.
I wouldn't think so, not for that long.
And that may, I mean, you've got a really important key there in terms of why she might not be using the box, is she's just very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck with that.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn, and our guest this afternoon in this portion of the program is one of the country's leading experts on cat behavior, Pam Johnson Bennett. She is the author of 5 books on cat behavior, including Think Like a Cat. Her latest is Hiss and Tell, True Stories from the Files of a Cat Shrink. Listeners, you can join us with your questions about cats this afternoon with a telephone call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. You know, this issue about the cat box and the covered cat box, and I'm just thinking of my own cat, and you know what? He doesn't like doors to be closed.
Right. That's a common,
you know,
behavior, too, because they're very smart. They know, it's called barrier frustration. Once they know that there is something on the other side of the door,
mm-hmm.
when they are scratching on it or pushing on it, they know that there is something there. They just don't make the connection that there's actually a door stopping them.
Hmm. This is interesting, because if you want a little privacy every once in a while and you go into a room and you shut the door, if the door's not tightly closed, he'll come along and he'll bap it right open.
Oh, I have long ago, when I first became a cat owner, I learned modesty was not going to prevail in my household,
yeah.
That's for sure.
Well, most of the time it's not a problem, but if you've got guests or something, you know,
right.
Everybody needs a little privacy. We've got a number of folks waiting to talk with us now on the phones. We're going to go first to a caller on line 1 in Urbana. Hi.
Hi. I had a question about the way that cats show affection. I may be projecting with my own cat, who I think, of course, is the most wonderful cat in the whole world.
As it should be.
but I always think that she's kissing me when she licks my hand or licks my face, or if she blinks her eyes at me, or if she pulls on my hand. Do you think that that's a sign of cat affection, or
yes,
is it something not?
You are absolutely right on. The licking is a bonding behavior in the colony, in the cat colony or in the nest. Cats will groom each other as a way to create one nest scent, because cats recognize each other by scent before anything else, even before sight. So what she's doing is she's mixing her scent with yours to try to create one scent. And it's a very sweet bonding behavior. And the blinking, they've been called cat kisses for years and years and years, as long as I can remember. A very slow blink is really a cat's way of giving you a kiss. And if your cat's on the other side of the room and very relaxed, and you give her one of those slow blinks, she'll give you a slow blink back.
Oh, that's really sweet.
So you're very, that's a great relationship. That's a very close.
And I would just say to anyone else who's listening that I really hope that they do go to the Humane Society to adopt cats. That's where I got my cat. Today is the 4th anniversary that I've had her. But if you're going to adopt a cat, please clean the litter box frequently and do everything that you're saying, because they should be taken care of as well as you would take care of a baby.
Right. Very well said.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we go to a listener in Champaign on line 2. Hi.
Hi. My question is, we have 2 cats. They're both long hairs. One of the cats, about, gosh, it's probably been about 2 months ago, got a hot spot on its kind of its hindquarters. And so we took her to the vet, and now she's wearing a collar, and the vet gave us some medication to give her. And it's been a couple months, and it's gotten better, but when we've tried to take the collar off, she just goes right for that area, and it just doesn't seem, then she opens it back up. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I hate to keep the collar on her for a long time.
Does the vet know what the cause of this hot spot is? Okay, because sometimes if there is no medical reason for it, it can be out of stress.
Mm-hmm.
Cats are just notorious groomers, as we know, and when they are very stressed, they have to displace that behavior somewhere. They have to put that energy somewhere, and because they're such great groomers, they'll turn it toward grooming. And if they're stressed, that grooming will then become almost self-mutilation. They'll get started on something and then just not stop.
Hmm.
So if it's not healing and the vet doesn't have a medical reason for what is causing this, and she keeps going back to it, I would look into the idea that it might be kind of a psychological problem. And in that case, she needs more playtime, more distraction. When you take the collar off, you get a toy out and you play with her.
Okay.
I mean, just 15 minutes, let her really enjoy, get that out. So, and every time, you're almost going to have to keep some toys handy that are kind of stashed around the house, so that when you see her walking around, if she's looking like she's about to bother it or she looks stressed, you play with her. And you'll eventually get that memory out of her mind that she has to play with scratch.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
The call.
Good luck with it.
Next we go to Champaign, a listener on line 3. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I'll tell you what the problem I have. We had 8 cats, and we thought we'd top out at 10, so we got 2 more, and we brought them in the house. They were both males, and they were pretty good for a while, but then the nightmare. 2 of the males started spraying, and I don't know what to do about it.
Okay. Every time you add a cat, they have to jockey for position and do all this renegotiation with territory.
So, yeah.
I would say make sure everyone has a sanctuary. Make sure there's enough space for everybody. Make sure the litter boxes are spread throughout the house.
Okay.
And try to narrow down. There's probably, the cats who are spraying are probably not having a problem with all the other cats. You may find that one of the cats just having a problem with 1 or 2 cats. So
yeah,
when you see them together, if you see that there's any kind of tension, again, playtime. I'm always saying playtime because it's the best way to just get rid of that energy before it turns to anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Do a lot of playtime so that you wear them out. It's harder to be really stressed out and nervous when you're after you've exercised.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and your body feels relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And just try to pin down where the problem is, and you might be able to work it kind of like a cat at a time.
Yeah,
it's
so spread out the litter pans.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because when we had 8, we never had a problem. I mean, it was just, everything was perfect.
Right, and if you think of the rungs of a ladder, right, you have the top cat, and then each cat who comes in should slide in on the next rung.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is, after a while, a new cat may come in, maybe the 9th cat, and he decides, I'm too dominant to go in on the bottom
right
rung. I want to go in maybe on the 3rd rung.
Mm-hmm.
And then that just upsets everything. And also behaviorists have, from all the clinical case studies and everything, have pretty much decided that if you have 10 cats, you pretty much stand a 100% chance that there's going to be a spraying problem because there just isn't a house big enough unless you're really, really, really wealthy.
Right.
There isn't a house big enough for them to feel as if they have enough adequate territory.
Yeah. So I probably pushed it over the edge when I got the last two.
Not necessarily. It may just mean that you have to rework some things. For instance, the litter boxes may have to be in places you wouldn't necessarily want them. You know, it might mean a litter box has to be in the dining room because that's a more neutral territory for the
cat. Yeah, they used to all be in the basement, and that was perfect, but now I've had to bring three upstairs.
Yeah. Just scatter them around, and that's kind of part of having multi-cats. You know, you can't necessarily have the litter box in an area that's most convenient. At this point, you really just have to...
I'll spread those litter boxes around and give it another try, but I'll tell you, that spraying is a problem.
Well, if it gets really bad and...
It's just two of the cats doing it.
Okay, and just concentrate on those two in terms of helping them form positive associations. Do the playtime, which will really diffuse the tension. Move the litter boxes, and if that still isn't doing it, talk to your vet about maybe having a behaviorist come over or doing a telephone consultation.
Yeah.
Because that I've found that when I go into someone's house, I can see something that they've been just too close to.
Yeah.
And that might be the solution.
Yeah. Well, I'll give it the try, but I'll never get rid of them, I'll tell you that.
I'm with you there.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Next we go to a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I have two female cats, and they're both really sweet. Love them a lot. And I always have fresh water for them, but one of them insists on sipping from and licking the faucet. Why does she do that?
A couple reasons. It's a play behavior. It's just a habit. Sometimes when there's nothing else to do, any kind of movement in the house, whether it's the blinds that swing or the water dripping from the faucet, they enjoy. The other thing is the water that comes from the faucet is just so oxygenated and so fresh. One thing that you can do to break that habit, because you don't want to get into that habit of where the cat just kind of like on command will go up on the counter and you know you have to turn on the faucet, you can buy pet drinking fountains. You can see them in the back of cat magazines all the time. There are great ones. There's one called Drink Well that was actually created by a vet. And you can adjust the flow. You plug it in. It's like an aquarium filter. And the cat will learn to drink from that, and then you can slow the flow down till eventually the cat will learn to just drink from the bowl.
Okay, that was my question.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
That's a common problem.
Next, we go to a listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Hi there. Like the last caller, my cat refuses to drink. I pretty much always have to let him drink out of the bathtub faucet. I don't think I'm going to be able to change him on that one. But my question provides my friends with a lot of amusement. Anytime, like, my friends are over and we're eating pizza or whatever, we'll, like, be sitting on the floor or whatever, and if we leave, like, a plate that has any food on it, like a bowl or whatever, my cat will come over and bury the plate. And it's so funny, and people don't believe me, and I show them, and they just laugh. And last night we were having pizza and set the box down, and he put two pairs of my socks on top of the pizza box. And I was wondering if you have any idea what that's about.
Sure. It's a very natural behavior. Your cat is a little more enthusiastic about it, but it's a survival instinct. In the wild, when a cat has finished eating the prey, or if he doesn't want any more of it, he will bury it so that it doesn't attract other predators to the area, and also so it doesn't alert other prey that a predator is around.
Uh-huh.
So your cat, your indoor cat, still carries that from the wild, even though he's covering pizza, he still thinks it's his job. And cats very commonly will do that when they're done eating their dinner. They'll do this scraping around the floor, and owners very often think, oh, well, he's telling me he doesn't like it. That's not the case. It's just survival.
Oh, that's
funny. Like that, the socks covering the pizza. That's a good one.
Yeah, he's pretty goofy. So, all right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call this afternoon. You know, this story reminds me of a story that's in Hiss and Tell, and we don't have time to tell it, so people will have to go and look for the book. But that is, there's a cat story in the book, Hiss and Tell, where there was a cat burying all kinds of goodies in the mattress of in someone's home.
Yeah, it's kind of a creepy story.
In the Box Springs, yeah.
But Hiss and Tell, I tried to. That's just about 16 stories of the craziest house calls I've had. You know, if you read that book, you'll feel so much better about the cat you have.
Yeah, you'll laugh, you'll cry, as they say. Well, thank you so much, Pam, for joining us this afternoon. And take it easy, take care, and best to you and your cats.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Celeste. I enjoyed it.
Pam Johnson-Bennett has been our guest this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Her latest book is Hiss and Tell, True Stories from the Files of a Cat Shrink. She is also the author of a book on how to raise a well-adjusted cat, and it is titled Think Like a Cat. Also, you can find her on the web at pamjohnsonbennett.com. And that's all one word, and Bennett has two N's and two T's.